holistic, body, mind, spirit, paranormal, all of that good stuff field. And our guest tonight, when you go to the paranormal field and you look at the women that make up this field, we have great people like Andrea Holzer. Her father was Hans Holzer. And you have other women. But a pioneer who is well known in this field is Pamela Heath, Dr. Pamela Heath. Dr. Heath trained as an anesthesiologist and has practiced medicine at a variety of locations, including spending 2 years working in the heart of the Navajo Reservation. Dr. Heath began having spontaneous psychic experiences in the 1990s. She returned to school for her doctorate in psychology, specializing in parapsychology, as a way of understanding her own gifts. In the experiences, her gifts, and also some of the experiences that she was having with information on the afterlife. She has also had 13 years of working in the field with ghost investigations with Lloyd Arabak, and he's been on the show, and has worked with the Office of Paranormal Investigations. She has published numerous journals and textbooks on all types of topics, place memory, experimental research, survival of the body after death, PK. Her books include The PK Zone, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, which I'm interested to know about that because as a psychic medium, too, you know, that is one of the main questions that a lot of people ask is my loved one damned to hell? Are they suffering? Are they, hello, everybody, are they living this feeling of torment over and over and over again? So what I would say to that is, as a psychic medium, the conversations that I've had don't feel like that whatsoever. But maybe we can talk with her about that and see what the research shows. She is someone that if you have a radio show or television station or something, you better believe she's one that you definitely need to have on because she is an expert in the field. And I love the fact that she is a woman. You know, that's just awesome. So let me give you some more information about our guest. And we've had some difficulty, guys, so just bear with me. I think the information that I gave her was incorrect. So she's supposed to actually call in this number, but I think I gave her the wrong number. So just bear in with me. We'll wait for a little bit and see what happens. And if not, then I'll open the phone lines. And we'll start taking some calls for just talking with me. But she's also appeared on television both as a psychic and a parapsychologist. She lives in the Bay City in San Francisco, and her website is PamelaHeath.com. So I think she just recently was on Ghost Labs as well as a parapsychologist. And I've always been fascinated with parapsychology and also psychology. And it's interesting how the two combine in so many ways. So that's really a wonderful feel for a lot of us that are interested in psychology because we have that wounded healer within ourselves. And some of us are very interested in the paranormal, and the parapsychology is almost a combination of both, I'm assuming. So, hello? Hello, welcome to the show. Hello?
Yeah, it's Dr. Heath. Can't you hear me?
Yes. I am so sorry.
I've been trying and trying to get into you, and I haven't been able to reach you.
I am so sorry.
Sorry.
Did you get the email, or did you get it from Psychic on Air?
I just got the email a few minutes ago, and I've called in, and I've been waiting in your queue.
Okay.
And then for some reason, you couldn't seem to hear me when I was answering.
Okay. You know, it's funny, I'm sitting here sending, please read your email, please read your email. So I guess you got the message. It is my pleasure to talk with you, Dr. Heath, and I do apologize for the miscommunication. So we're going to start the interview now. How did you go from an anesthesiologist to a parapsychologist?
Well, I actually was an anesthesiologist, practicing anesthesiologist, when I started having some very odd experiences I couldn't explain. I think what started off was I started to know things about my patients before I'd talk to them, before I'd even exchanged a single word with them. I'd glance at somebody and sort of know what was going on with them, and hadn't read their chart either. And I thought that was kind of odd, but I kind of blew it off and thought, well, it must have been some subtle, you know, body language I picked up. And then I started knowing what kind of cases I was going to do as emergencies at night. And that really struck me as odd, that I would know that at 2 o'clock in the morning I was going to get an emergency OB-GYN case, so, gee, I'd better go to bed early tonight.
Wow.
And then I started noticing I would always wake up just before the phone would ring from the emergency room at night. Sorry, that's my cat talking to you. And I only woke up just before the call. I didn't wake up constantly all night long, and it just happened that sometimes that coincided with the ER calling. And the only time that I woke up and they didn't call, I asked, and they said, well, yeah, we were actually dialing your number, but the person died, so we can't
leave
a call. So I thought, now this is really weird, you know, because I didn't think of myself as at all psychic. And so I started asking around for the name of a good psychic, someone reputable and not just who did cold readings. And I got the name of Warren Hoover, who's a spiritualist in Casadega. And so I made an appointment with him, and I didn't tell him anything about myself. All I had was my first name, and I wore plain clothes. I was determined not to get a cold reading. And he just leans out the door and grins his head off, and he says, come on in. You are going crazy. You really are psychic. We have lots to talk about. And I was like, wow, okay. And that was what kicked it all off.
Wow, that's interesting. We had a caller that had a question for you, so we're going to get back with her in just a minute. So if you're still holding, caller, for your question for Dr. Heath, continue to hold. We're going to come back to you in just a little bit. You know, your resume, I love that you have your resume on the website and all of your professional experience, which is just phenomenal. But what kind of training have you actually had?
You want to talk in terms of medical or psychic?
Probably psychic.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because we could go days just talking about your experience.
Okay, I just like to be clear.
I want to be like you when I grow up.
thank you. Well, I start because I would say that my strongest gift is as a healer. I started by working for 6 months with Mary Smiley, who was a healer with a spiritualist church in Casadega. And I really liked her. This woman was really not in it for the money. She charged about $4 a lesson.
Wow.
And I worked with her, really learned a lot from her. She taught all different types of techniques. So I got a really nice grounding in about, I would say, 20 or 30 different ways you could heal. And then after that, at the time I was having a problem, I think it's not really that uncommon with people who are just becoming psychic, that I needed better shielding. It just felt like too much pressure against my brain trying to block everybody out all the time in Orlando. So that and the fact that I'd long wanted to work on the Navajo Indian Reservation, I went off there. And I just spent a couple years, in addition to practicing medicine, also spending a lot of time in meditation and reading. And then I went back to school, this time in parapsychology. And one of the nice things about my parapsychology program is that we did have not only to get to know some professional psychics who were very gifted, like Annette Martin and Campbell, but I also had a teacher, Alan Vaughn, who, like me, had not started off life psychic. He had started off as a science editor and had then had an experience with a Ouija board that kind of blew him open psychically. And he became or was known as one of the top 100 psychics in the world and, you know, was very, very gifted guy. And so it was really nice to have people like that as part of my training program. And
okay.
I would say that would be my major, you know, training.
Okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and go to the phone lines. If you'd like to speak with Dr. Heath, the number to call is 646-716-9819. Thank you so much, caller, for holding. Are you still there?
I am, indeed.
Okay,
thank
go
you.
Ahead. Okay, thank you. Go ahead and ask your question for Dr. Heath.
Just a little setup, Dr. Heath. Thank you for taking my call. I just started having some psychic experiences about a year and a half ago. I lost someone very close to me, and I was his primary caregiver. And at that point, I started really researching where do we go and all these kinds of things that people do to start their spiritual path. And I started having a lot of experiences. I've been seeing orbs and kind of flashes of light. Once I saw two sort of darting stars go across my bedroom. And these kinds of things can make you feel a little bit crazy. And I do work in the operating room.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of translucent bubbles and connected into different types of shapes, not discernibly human, but big enough like basketball-type shapes, but not necessarily orb shapes, but kind of floating in the room and shadows moving on the walls when there's no human being associated with the shadow. And so I would just like your opinions about what I'm experiencing. I did have a brain scan for an unrelated concern about 4 years ago. I had benign positional vertigo, and they were able to confirm that it was just so calcification. So I have had a brain scan.
I don't think that would show it. The one thing you'd want to rule out with what you're describing
mm-hmm.
is that you could have a partial retinal tear. So an ophthalmologist, a good eye exam, dilated eyes, I would rule that out. For the
I have no eye
light.
Pain, and the shapes
no, you
are always different.
You won't have pain with this.
Okay.
So I would rule that out, okay? However, there may be more than that going on. Yeah, as a doctor, I just have to say you have to rule that out, too. Because the flashes of light across the room, that can be kind of classic for real early retinal tear. Yeah. I would rule that out, okay? In terms of some of the other stuff that you're seeing, I got to tell you, I think a lot of people don't realize that in some cultures, well, even in this culture, probably 60 to 70% of widows will see their deceased spouse within a week of their passing. And it is common in some cultures, some cultures it's up to 100% of people will start having experiences after the death of someone very close to them. And I don't think it's the psychology of, you know, some people go, oh, well, it's just they're missing this person. I don't think that's it. I think it's that they have a reason to contact you. Hey, I really care about this person. They took care of me. I want to thank them. I want to come back and let them know I'm okay. That kind of message is very, very common. And there's different ways it can be transmitted. For some people, they'll do it in dreams, but for others, you know, if they think that you're psychically open, they may sort of be drawn to try and connect with you during the day. And having worked in an operating room for nearly 30 years, it can be very boring, put you into a nice sort of mild trance state sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe more psychically open. See, I've been there, done that. A little more psychically open. Just like for some people it would be when they're falling off to sleep or or drowsing before they get up. It can be
very similar.
And
isn't it unusual to have a sensation of sort of a burning, sort of an electrical kind of a sensitivity on the left top side of my head? And sometimes my face will get a little bit numb.
Well, what I would say is all of this information comes from the unconscious mind. So when you've ruled out physical things going on, then you have to ask yourself, okay, is this my unconscious mind's particular way of trying to communicate information to me? And the other thing is how your unconscious chooses to give you that information can change. I know when I was first, when I first became psychic, I guess is the way I'll put it, I would taste auras. Literally. They'd taste like flavors in my mouth.
Wow.
You would taste orbs.
I would taste auras.
Auras. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And then,
that's interesting.
And then it developed to, you know, other types of, you know, information. So the unconscious mind can use any body sense. It can sort of evoke it as a way of communicating with you, whether you see it as a color or taste it or hear it. It's all up to your particular unconscious mind's choice as to what it thinks will best communicate that information to you or get your attention. And it can be different for each of us. For me, I know I will get differences in temperature depending on what kind of spirit I'm dealing with sometimes. And I've learned it's sort of like learning a code to start to realize, oh, okay, if I'm getting this sensation, it means that. And you start to learn to translate this language that your unconscious mind is using your body for as a way of communicating to you what's going on psychically.
Okay.
I really appreciate, and I'm really enjoying the show.
Okay. Do you want me to keep you on hold so you can live listen?
Pardon me?
Do you need...
I would love that. I would love to continue to listen. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling in. Okay. And if you have questions and you would like to speak with Dr. Heath, the number to call is 646-716-9819. Okay. Let's talk about what are some of the biggest misconceptions about parapsychology?
Oh, gosh, there are so many. That's a great question. A lot of people think it involves anything that's unexplained, which it doesn't. Parapsychology is actually a very limited field. It only looks at three topics. It looks at whether the mind can have information either from other minds or the world around it, whether consciousness or the mind can influence the world around it, which is mind-matter interaction, and whether consciousness can survive the death of the body. So really, it's a very consciousness-oriented field, and it doesn't look at vampires, UFOs, werewolves. I could go on and on. it's just a very, very narrow field. And it's really, well, most people think of it as having started in the 1880s. With the Society for Psychical Research in England,
okay.
And then its American counterpart a few years later, the American Society for Psychical Research, and then of course it got a real burst with the Rhines in the 30s, and continued from there.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about how you would test as a parapsychologist. What are some of the ways that you would actually test for ESP and, I guess, different kinds of psychic abilities?
Well, nowadays, a lot of people will use computer tests to check for psychic abilities. And, the main ones right now would probably either be a Ganzfeld, which is using partial sensory deprivation, putting someone in an easy chair with some ping pong balls over their eyes and soft pink light and white music in their ears, and then asking them to sort of give whatever impressions they have of whatever the target is that's elsewhere.
Okay.
Or you would have the good precognition test that they're using now, is you have a computer that has a randomized series of images, and some of the images are really violent, and some of them are totally peaceful, and some might be arousing, like they might be a really delicious chocolate dessert or something, you know.
Okay.
And they'll actually have you hooked up to physiological measures. And what they'll see is that your body will react before the stimulus is chosen in the correct direction for whatever stimulus you get. So your body may start to get aroused 1 to 5 seconds before you actually get shown that delicious-looking chocolate dessert. Or it may just go into sort of calm mode a little bit before they choose the calm picture. It's one of the more intriguing areas of pure psychology right now. So most of our studies involve computers, and if possible, we get the conscious mind out of the way. So we don't have to worry about people making things up or being uncertain whether to really say what they're getting. You know what I mean? The
mm-hmm.
body isn't lying here.
Okay. I just put out a website for those in the chat room, something that I just recently ran across called remote-viewing.com. And as far as different tests, I like that this particular website has, I think, 100 or 200 different targets for you to utilize, similar to what Dr. Heath is saying, different pictures. And
that website? I'm going to search it.
It's remote-viewing.com.
/?
Actually, it's like the phone number slash.
Hyphen.
I don't know.
Okay.
I always call it a slash. It's a hyphen.
Okay. I know my own group has a remote viewing site that we just started, but I'm not sure that... Who does this site?
Let me check. They offer a free course. Let me see.
Okay.
I don't know.
My group is crvers.com. It's a group of Bay Area remote viewers who have worked together for 10 years.
Okay.
And we're starting to put some of our stuff up. We'll probably have information. I also would recommend Lynn Buchanan.
Okay.
Which is crviewers.com or crviewer.com. I always forget if there's an S on the end.
Okay.
He's a very reputable guy. He was one of the Stargate viewer. Well, he technically wasn't a viewer. He was part of their training and database stuff, but he did do some viewing. And he has very good courses, and you would actually be learning it. What I find is a lot of people who teach remote viewing or say they teach remote viewing, it's become a new buzzword, and
okay.
they may or may not actually know what remote viewing is, which from the viewpoint of a purist is sort of aggravating. Controlled remote viewing is a really neat technique, and anybody can get psychic information with it.
Okay.
But basically you're writing down... what you hope are psychic impressions. On the left-hand side, it's only adjectives, descriptors. And anytime you get a noun and you think you're trying to name something, you're setting it aside to the right. And what you find is as you start to do this, all of a sudden there'll be this moment when you feel a connection to the target. I didn't even mention that kind of training, did I? I've done about 6 courses with Lynn Buchanan
Wow.
I've done a bunch of courses with Lynn Buchanan on remote viewing. There's this moment when
I'll... When are you going to be in Florida? I just want to sit down and pick the brain for like an hour.
You know, I lived in Florida for 7 years, and I really enjoyed Orlando, but I haven't had any reason to come back there for quite a while. But anyway, there's this moment when all of a sudden you get thrown into like this virtual reality world that your unconscious mind has created for you. And it is incredibly real. I mean, it's better than any video game I've ever seen, because all of a sudden you can see things, you can touch them, you can taste them, you can smell them, and you can start to get information about this place. So I like remote viewing because it's really good for details. it's something that I think can work for just about anybody if you follow the rules. If you're really doing controlled remote viewing as originated by Ingo Swann and, you know,
okay,
worked on. But
well, I would say to you...
I want to know who those people were before I put my money down.
I gotcha. What I would say is that Dr. Heath has some wonderful resources on her website under her help and resources, and also she has a link of people that she recommends. So you can check that out, and she will possibly have that remote viewing information up on the site, so just look for it in the future.
I do. It's under the links. You can find links for, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to check that out. I'd prefer to go with someone you recommend than someone I find on Google.
and there are legit people that I don't list, and it doesn't mean that they're not legit. These are just people I've personally had contact with, and I know what they are. There are others like Paul Smith, who I know teaches controlled remote viewing. Some of the others who were really, really good in the field, like Joe McMonagall, I think he's off in Japan. I don't know whether he's ever taught it, although he certainly could. He knows the field very well.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk more about you. What is your view on clairvoyance?
It happens. Yeah, clairvoyance is the ability to know information at a distance or to see information. Technically, it's to see it as opposed to hear it, which is clairaudience, or to feel it in your body, which is clairsentience. Some people talk about clairvoyance as if it is remote viewing. I keep them separate. To me, clairvoyance is simply when you know something psychically, like you have a vision of what's going on elsewhere, and remote viewing is where you're using this very specific technique for getting information. And it's important to distinguish, because with clairvoyance, you always have a sense of what you're looking at. You know, the classic story is the guy who saw the fire taking out St. Petersburg or whatever. But with remote viewing, sometimes you'll finish a session and you don't have a clue what you were looking at. Literally, you have all these great details about it, which are in some cases 100% accurate, and yet you don't know what you were seeing.
Hmm.
So they're very, to me, it's sort of like clairvoyance is from the top down. It's getting an overall impression, and then you hopefully work down to the details. With remote viewing, it's from the bottom up. You get the details. And if you get to be really good, like Lynn Buchanan or, you know, Paul Smith or Mel Riley or, any of those people, Joe McMonagall especially is very gifted, then you may actually know what you were looking at. But for most of us schmoes who do remote viewing, you get all these wonderful details and you still don't have a clue what it was.
Okay. Well, let's see if you. We can talk about something else now. Yeah, I would love to just bring you here and just like kidnap you for like about an hour, or two, or three, or four.
Where are you located?
Pick your brain. I'm in Pensacola, Florida.
Oh, okay, way up there.
Yeah, way up there. Because your expertise, I mean, is just phenomenal. I love the fact that you're a woman, but I love that you're a highly educated woman in this field, and it almost asks us to step up our game, and I just love it.
It's interesting because women have been in the field of parapsychology since its inception, from the very beginning. Sidgwick's wife, Eleanor Sidgwick, was very, I mean, this is the 1800s. She was big into the education of women. And was associated with one of the colleges, I believe, at Oxford. And then you had Louisa Rhine, who did all the major research on spontaneous cases and case reports. And then you can look at Gertrude Schmeidler, a psychologist at New York University, I think it was, or New York College, that did a tremendous amount of increasing our understanding of that that parapsychology is in fact a psychological process. That events not only have meaning and purpose, but they're more apt to happen with people who are close to us. And then you can look at Rhea White, who was one of the first to really look at what these experiences are like and tease out important factors from that. So there's this tremendous long history of women promoting the field of parapsychology.
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about, you know, as a psychic and psychics and psychic mediums, we hear a lot of skeptical people sometimes say things like, well, you know, why can't you just tell me the name, or why can't you predict it this way or that way, or blah, 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 or give me dates all the time. Why do you feel that's not the case?
I think there's a couple things going on. One is that, generally speaking, most people feel that intuition is a right brain type of activity. Now, I'm wording this very carefully because we've started to realize that nothing in the brain is simply one-sided to speak of. You know, everything is sort of a mix of the two, but you certainly get a little bit more right hemisphere predominance with global intuitive stuff. And all of your words and numbers are in the left hemisphere. So a lot of people feel it's therefore hard to sort of switch over and pick those up. It can also relate to what's important to you. If dates and specific names aren't as important to you as feelings and what's going on socially between people, you're not going to pick that up. Because certainly remote viewers have no trouble picking up dates if they're asked them. Okay?
Okay.
So some of it could have to do with what's important to you. We're all good at what's important to us. The other is, I know for me, if I'm dealing with a skeptic, I could just care less what they think. And I can't get interested in getting data for them. I don't care.
Exactly.
You know, they're making you jump through hoops. They're not going to believe you no matter what you say. Why should I waste my time or energy? I'll just walk away. I mean, and some of that also comes from my awareness that whether somebody is a devout skeptic, you know, or a disbeliever, that has to do with a worldview or paradigm. And there's no way you can ever change their mind about things. Even if they have a personal experience, they'll go into denial.
True.
So why waste your energy there, you know?
That is so true. We're going to go to the phone lines, 563. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. I just turned you on.
I love your accent. Where are you from?
Illinois.
Okay. You know, sometimes I get teased because I'm from the South, so how are you doing?
Good.
Did you have a question for Dr. Pamela Heath, our guest today?
No, not really. I am just kind of listening, and
okay.
I wanted to hear it over the phone.
Okay. Well, I'll keep you holding. Thanks so much. It was my pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. I also wanted to talk about something totally different, off the field totally. You wear many hats.
Yeah.
You wear a lot of hats. And you have some killer red boots on your website, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
love them.
Yeah.
So tell me some of the things away from the whole paranormal field, the parapsychology, what are some things that Dr. Heath likes to do?
Oh, I'm an oil painter, if you couldn't tell that, too, from my website. And I do cartooning. But I would say my passion now is more often doing computer web design, computer artwork. I've been doing some of that. And for years have done it for friends, and I've kind of decided I should go pro if I'm going to keep doing it for everybody I know. So that's one of the sort of many things. I love reading. I'm a voracious reader. And right now, in addition to all the nonfiction stuff, I'm doing a lot of writing of fiction, both screenplays, and I'm probably going to get back into the novel writing again.
Okay. And is it true that you also have some kind of belt Black belt?
No, not black belt. I am one level below black belt. Yeah, I study both Muay Thai and sort of an American Tang Sudo style of Taekwondo.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, for a lot of years, it's great for learning self-defense. I did it, you know, when I started it, I did it just because I was so often in dark parking lots alone in the middle of the night. And as a woman, you hear stories of what can happen to you in these situations, and I thought, I'll just learn some basic self-defense. And about 2.5 years later, I felt like I had the basics down.
Well, you have, you know, the artwork, the paintings, the sculptures, all these different things, photos, artifacts on your website for those to look at. But I also want to talk about your writing. You have written several books and journals and whatnot, but why did you write the book on suicide?
When I was a graduate student, I used to spend a lot of time in the head of my dissertation committee's office. I mean, any grad student knows this is just what you do. And listening to him go on and on. And he often brought up the topic that he had once been asked to put together some pages about what happens to suicides in the afterlife for a woman who was suicidal as a kind of what psychologists call bibliotherapy. And I kept going, you know, because this is my psychic hit, you know, John, you ought to do that as a book. It would be a great book. It could save lives. You know, people knew, besides which as a doctor, I love informed consent. Let people know what they're getting into. If they still choose it, at least, you know, they'll better be able to navigate what they find themselves in. And, you know, after quite a few years of, you know, saying that to John, I finally realized he was never going to write the book. Plus, unless I did most of the work. So I ended up reading about 500 books and gathering together all the material and then organizing it and doing the basic writing on it. And I'm still very proud of that book. We literally spent thousands of dollars in copyright permission fees because we wanted people to see the original material and know that we weren't making stuff up.
Okay.
And I will add, before people start reacting already, euthanasia is a different situation from traditional suicide, and it's treated differently by those in the afterlife.
Okay. Well, you will have to go to Pamela's website, Dr. Pamela Heath's website, and check that out and get the book. Those books and journals and all of that information is on her site. But you can also, can they also purchase the books, your books off of your website?
Not on my website. I say go to Amazon. You can get the best prices there. And we didn't do that book for that for the money. We did it as sort of a public service kind of a thing of wanting people really to know if you do commit suicide, what are you getting into? Or if you're interested in suicide, you might want to think about whether this is really what you want to get into. I should say that's more what we wrote it for. And if you know somebody who committed suicide, understand they don't burn in hell forever. You know, they do move on. They're going to be okay ultimately. It may be a slow process, but they'll get there eventually. And to try and help them find some peace.
Okay. We're going to go to the phone lines. 610, welcome to the show. Hello, welcome to the show.
Your sound thing is kind of weird, I have to admit, because it took me about 5 minutes, I think, for you to hear me.
Wow.
Hello, hello, hello. Just keep trying. I mean, eventually it did seem to connect.
Okay, I think they went bye-bye. So.
Oh, did they? They gave up?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hopefully you guys will call back, 610, if you would call back, we'll pick up for you.
Oh, maybe I can talk about the next book, which is out in April.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
It came out of the suicide book experience in that there was a lot of really good information in the suicide book about the afterlife in general. You know, it had nothing to do with suicide per se, just what is the afterlife like, what happens to people after they die. And it sounded when I was fielding questions from people like there was information in there that would really help them if they'd read it. And they, every time I asked them, well, what about reading this? It was like, no, I can't. I can't touch anything with the topic of suicide. It's just too sensitive. And I was like, okay, we need a book that doesn't talk about suicide, but talks about what happens in the afterlife. And so that is this next book, and it is called Handbook to the Afterlife. Like all of my books seem to be, it's a three-parter. The first part is mostly John talking about different religions and how they view the afterlife, and does give some sort of case vignettes or stories about what it's like. The middle third is more looking at the afterlife not so much as a place, but as an extension of lifespan development and the different things that you have to learn and steps that you have to go through in the afterlife from the time you first, you know, die until if you reincarnate, you reincarnate. You know, because not everybody necessarily does that. And that's sort of a toss-up in the literature, how many people believe in it or not. The last part of the book is mostly me, and it's about some tips for how to deal with spirits when they get stuck. And some of this is stuff that anybody can use. Some of it is oriented more towards if you're psychic, what kind of techniques you can use. And then I know John and I also talk in that section about how you can develop your own mediumship a little bit in terms of, say you want to learn to be a channel, say you want to learn to communicate with your loved ones in dreams. These are ways you can try and do that, or at least work towards it. So that's the next book out in April from North Atlantic Books again.
Okay. Sounds like something great. Again, all of your writings, a lot of the information is on the website, PamelaHeath.com, and you can look at that stuff and, again, the links that are available. And you also have an event coming up real soon. What will you be doing at that event, Dr. Heath?
Oh, I'm going to be giving a talk just a little way south of here with the it's a convention, I think, hosted by the Ghost Trackers, who I've sort of had intermittent touch with for a while. And I have to finish putting it together. But since I'd already done a talk about the science of parapsychology on the Queen Mary, this one will probably be a bit different. It'll be more about the afterlife, how spirits can get stuck, and how you can help them through these.
And just to plug that for Gloria, I met Gloria here in actually in St. Augustine. We were speaking at an expo together.
Uh-huh.
So to plug that for her, the California Ghost Hunters 2010 conference, you will be there along with Chris Fleming and lots of other people. So check that
I didn't
out.
Know Chris was going to be there. Okay.
I'm sorry, wrong person. Maybe not.
I don't
I'm
know.
Sorry,
I
wrong person.
Know.
John Oliver will be there.
Yeah, there
wrong,
you go.
Wrong guy. Wrong paranormal guy.
Yeah. And I'll certainly hang around and probably answer questions. I think I'm talking just before lunch, so I'll hang around a bit if people do have questions that don't get covered during the talk. Whether it involves the topic I talked about or parapsychology in general. So I'll try to make myself available.
Okay. And that website is ghost-trackers.org. And you can get that information. I'm putting it in the chat room. And just to confirm so there's no misunderstandings, because I know Chris is going to get me if he's someplace where it's not on his website, Chris Fleming is not going to be at the ghosttrackers.org. It is John Oliver. It was the wrong guy. I usually associate Gloria with Chris because they've worked so much together
in
the past.
Yeah, some dead famous episodes. So.
Yeah, so that was my mistake.
All right.
Let's see. What else is going on for you coming up?
Gosh, I have another book that's coming out. And I'm not sure exactly when, although it's all of it already available for pre-order from McFarland. And it's called Mind-Matter Interaction, Historical Reports, Research, and First-Hand Accounts. And it is going to be an updated, expanded, revised, and probably much improved copy of what used to be the PK Zone. And when I originally wrote the PK Zone, it was basically my dissertation put into more understandable language than academic double talk. And the literature review ended around, somewhere around 1999, 2000. And one of the promises I made myself when I was suffering as a poor graduate student trying to do the literature review was that I would never let another grad student suffer the way I did, because no one had summarized the literature since the 1970s. And I got to tell you, trying to read every journal and every research article in it from 1970 into the present is not a fun task. So this new book will bring the literature up to 2009. And it has some new topics the old one didn't cover. It's more readable. It will have a few pictures, not a lot. But I think it's going to be a better book, I'm hoping that people enjoy it. It is meant as a textbook, so it's going to be somewhat dry reading. But a lot of, if you want to know the science of the field, and I think you really should, because you're going to run into enough people who are skeptics that you want to be able to have some answers for them. And you know what I found this last year? It's really interesting. People who are skeptical, by and large, really don't know the research. They know the Cliff Notes version someone in a PsyCop organization told them, but they actually, you know, don't know the research. And if you start arguing research with them, they can't answer it. So I really recommend knowing specific research and what it shows and what it doesn't show. And, you know, who the names are. It's sort of, you know, I kind of got in this with a few others. I won't name them. Rather well-known psychic debunkers who, once I started talking specific research, they couldn't answer me.
Who could hold a candle to you?
They just squirmed. And, you know, but you have to know the research. And for mind-matter interaction, this is literally the only place where you're going to find it. For ESP, I would recommend Dean Radin's books, The Conscious Universe, very readable. Dean is actually a very witty guy, so I actually found it an enjoyable read, too, as well as doing a nice summary of some of the formal research. His more recent book is Entangled Minds. It's a bit denser. It's more into physics, but it does talk about some of the research that wasn't in the other book.
Okay. And, again, those links and resources are available on her website. And a lot of people are happy to have you on, happy that you're sharing all of the information on your website and the work that you've done in the field. So I just want to thank you for that. Let's see. There was something else I wanted to ask you. What is some of the best psychic advice you've ever been given?
It's not to talk about what you get. I think one of the first pieces of advice I ever got from a very gifted psychic was that the hard part isn't what to say, it's what not to say. There are a lot of times when you may get information and there's a desire, you know, for various reasons. Sometimes it's just compassion for the person you're around, you know, who you get the information about. Sometimes it's probably got an element of wanting to show off. There can be many different reasons why you may want to impart what you're getting as a psychic. My advice is, unless they paid you to do that, or they're a really good friend and they know you well and they're open to it, don't do it. You know, don't do it. And I even get this because, you know, I cross a lot of spirits over, and sometimes they have messages they want me to pass for them to loved ones, And these loved ones, they don't know me from Adam. You know, they don't know if I'm some, you know, trickster. And I can tell you from the other side of this, as having lost both my parents just a couple years ago, frankly, regardless of your beliefs in the afterlife, you don't necessarily want a stranger telling you something, even if you already know it. You know,
it's
just painfully, just too painful. So I always tell these spirits, if you want to get a message to your loved one, don't use me as an intermediary. Tell them in dreams. Let them get this information from you firsthand in sleep. Give them the comfort then, and I know you may not be able to do it now, but once you cross over to the other side, the guides will help you do this. They'll help you communicate back to your loved ones whatever messages you want, and then they'll have had it firsthand. And that's something they're more likely to be able to accept and to trust.
Okay. Well, please check out PamelaHeath.com.
I'm betting that wasn't the advice you expected me to say.
No. I did not know. I 100% agree with you, because a lot of times we decide that, you know, especially when we're learning.
Yeah.
when you're excited
and you want to pass it on. And sometimes you feel like that information could help somebody, but it can lead to backlash.
It definitely can. And I always say, and I learned this from someone along the way, don't go where you're not invited. And it takes one time doing that, I think, and getting the backlash where you learn the lesson. And some of you don't have to go there.
Yes.
You'll never have to learn the lesson. So that is very good advice.
No, I've heard that from more than one psychic, by the way. Now, I will say there have been times when I've had something happened recently, slip out of my mouth without my intending to share it. And sometimes if it's really coming straight from the unconscious mind through your mouth and bypassing the brain totally, you know, it may not even hit you what you said until later. And you're like, oops, didn't mean to let that one slide. But on the other hand, for your own knowledge and information, if something comes out that way, sometimes that's really accurate.
Mm-hmm.
it's not necessarily what you want to share, but just sort of be aware. Sometimes those kind of hits can be incredibly accurate. The other thing I would recommend for two things, if you're trying to develop your psychic abilities. One is there's a nice workbook out by Annette Martin called Discover Your Psychic World. She's been a professional psychic for many, many years and knows her stuff. And this is the workbook she uses with her students, many of whom have gone on to be good professional psychics. The other thing I would say is get a therapist. And I mean that quite literally. As you open the door to your unconscious, you will get more that comes up for you than simply psychic information. You will get your own baggage. And unless you deal with that, it will distort what you get as a psychic and sometimes even make what you're getting be quite inaccurate. And if you keep refusing to work with those issues, what tends to happen is people will start to get totally blocked as a psychic because the unconscious mind will pick its battles and it will decide, I want you to deal with this. I want to keep throwing this in your face until you deal with it. And then, of course, there's no room for other stuff to come in, like real psychic information, if it just keeps throwing this baggage up every time you open the door to it. So it is good to get a therapist, a good friend, a counselor. You know, it doesn't have to be a licensed psychologist necessarily, although that's not a bad idea. If you can find somebody who's open to psi. And I'll add that a lot of psychologists are open to psi because they've experienced it with their clients in session.
Okay. All righty. And I would probably just add that definitely very important that you read and educate yourself and try different modalities and different methods.
Yeah, I'd add a word of warning to that, especially in the last few decades. I have found that some of the older material is actually more accurate than new stuff.
Okay.
And I think that's because everyone wants to put their own mark on the field. They want to sell books, so they have to rewrite it, you know, to be in their own language. It's
okay.
The same basic information, but rewritten and rewritten. And sometimes when they rewrite it, they put an unintentional spin on it that isn't totally accurate. Because I have read some recent books that I can't recommend. They really aren't quite accurate.
Okay.
So I would say, yeah, read it. But also, what you read, have a grain of salt. If it doesn't feel right to you, if it doesn't match your experience, then maybe there's a reason for that.
Yes,
okay. Accurate.
It's been my pleasure, and hopefully I'll get to meet you one day, Dr. Heath. You have a wonderful evening, and thanks for joining Whispers from the Heart Radio.
All right. Thanks for having me as a guest.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Heart Radio.
All right. Thanks for having me as a guest.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Heart Radio.
All right. Thanks for having me as a guest.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Heart Radio.
All right. Thanks for having me as a guest.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Heart Radio.